Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Bills coach Sean McDermott knows great quarterback play when he sees it, because he sees it virtually every time he takes the field with his Bills. And when he looks across the field this week, he seems to like what he sees with Drake May in this battle Sunday night in Buffalo between the Patriots and the Bills. The guy that everybody wants to compare Drake May to. Schefter told me we were getting a little ahead of ourselves here, and I think he took the question a little too literally. I'm not saying Drake May is going to win the MVP.
I think that's Adam a little bit. He takes a lot of stuff kind of too literally.
That's everybody. How people are not seeing the fact that Drake May looks like Wegmans brand Josh Allen at this point, like, is it's absurd. The guy's responsible for 77% of the Patriots' offense. That's the most in the league. Josh Allen, at times, has literally carried the Buffalo Bills by themselves. They're similarly sized. They have similar skill sets. I think it's a very fair comparison. We're not saying he's an MVP now or going to win the Super Bowl, but he looks like he's on that track.
So let's just look at the comparison, the numbers through four games. Drake May, 988 yards passing. Josh Allen, 964. Advantage, Drake May. Total touchdowns, Josh Allen, 10. Drake May, 9. Advantage, Josh Allen. Different tone of voice. Passer rating, 109.4 for Drake May, 109.7 for Josh Allen. Damn it, advantage Josh Allen. Oh, completion percentage, 74% for Drake May, only a measly 70.2% for Josh Allen. Advantage Drake May. And interceptions, Drake May 2, Josh Allen 1, advantage Josh Allen. But those numbers, it's a month. I get it. It's only a month. But I think that puts into perspective why I ask Adam Schefter a question like that. I'm not talking about MVP votes or how many straight times he's going to win the division starting this year. It's just, is he trending in that direction? And Ted, I think you believe, after a little hiccup of faith after week one.
Week one really just was a gut punch for me.
But now you're back. Like, he's trending proper direction.
I was never off. I was a little concerned is what I was. So, yeah, he's kind of trending towards, being the player that I have basically telling everybody to be patient, just wait, it's going to happen type of player. So I'm encouraged by that. I almost think the better comparison would be to compare Drake May's first 15 games to Josh Allen's first 15 games. And it's night and day different. It is Drake May by a mile.
Yep.
So you're comparing a guy that's been in the league, whatever, however long Josh has been, like eight years, versus a guy that's been hardly finished even his first year, essentially, with the amount of games he's played. So to me, the better comparison is the first 2 years of each player. And Drake May blows away when it comes to touchdowns versus interceptions versus yardage versus completion percentage. So far in his first 15 games versus Josh, Drake May is the better quarterback.
And Fitzy, I thought it was interesting. Drake May spoke with the media on Wednesday, as he always does, press conference down at Gillette Stadium. Said a lot of interesting things, but one that I particularly latched onto was him acknowledging that, nope, not that. That I hear every week when we talk to him, and every time he talks there's always a Andy. But no, he acknowledged that he watches some Josh Allen film, and that the one specific thing that he's been looking at is pump fakes. Pump fakes outside the pocket, and the way Josh Allen utilizes pump fakes on the move to manipulate defenders into what he wants them to do. And a lot of times players, I feel like, are afraid to acknowledge that, yeah, I'm studying the guy I'm playing this week, or some of the coaches get mad if you start to go down those roads. I thought it was interesting that he's like, yeah, I'm watching him because he's good at that, and that might be able to help me.
Can I give you an example from last week's game where he did that?
Faux show?
It wasn't a pump fake, but it was a look and turning of the shoulders that got, I think, a cornerback off of Steph Diggs, who was doing the deep over on 3rd and 15.
Yep.
Okay, it was zone coverage. And so the DBs are facing the quarterbacks. There's not man-to-man where their backs are turned. So they are reading the quarterback because they're playing zone. And why are teams playing zone against the Patriots? Because the quarterback has the ability to run with the football, so they're terrified of playing man when their backs are turned. And what does that do? That opens up little pockets for Steph Diggs, who's excellent at exploiting zone defenses. And so I say all that to say, watch Drake May on that play. He kind of, with his eyes and with his shoulders, with his head, gives the impression that he's going to go to the outside receiver, gets that corner to kind of hesitate for a split second, and then that dig route deep over opens up for Steph Diggs behind him. And it was a beautiful kind of way to manipulate the defense just by using his head and his shoulders and out the pump fake. Then the pump fake will come next.
And doesn't the zone defense give him more ability to do that? Because the eyes are on him. So you're more influenced by the eyes or the shoulders or the pump fake.
Exactly.
Whereas if it's man-to-man, you're mostly worried about where the hell your man is, right?
Correct.
You're chasing him down the field. So I just think this, it feels like we're starting to have fine-tuning of Drake May more than like, holy crap, stop turning the ball over. Holy crap, is he good enough kind of conversations. It's more like, oh, can he do this little thing better? Can he do this little? And I think that's when you know, Fitzy, you're really kind of going down that path of oh, this guy looks like he's the guy.
But the arm strength, always there. The physical size, tools, talent, always there. The speed, the ability to run. Look how good he looked in that play where he rolled to his left. That first read wasn't there because, once again, as we saw all the way back in Forge and Foxborough, Mike Vrabel was praising him for keeping the pass play alive as long as possible. But then he could take off and run. So he's trying to be a quarterback, not just like an athlete or running back that can throw. Going through all the right progressions. But if you're going to add these little finishing touches that are going to make it take it from like a steak dinner to an elegant dinner and presentation, it's going to be things like learning the pump fake and manipulating the pocket. And yes, you should be, quote, you know, borrowing from the best. Like Mahomes' pump fake when he runs infuriates people. And I know people hate when he does it near the sideline and then doesn't get, you know, gets the extra couple yards, fakes like he's going to go out, but then doesn't. But like, borrow from the ones that have already experienced success, add it to the toolbox, and slowly but surely, he becomes even more dangerous.
But there's more to Sunday night than just the comparison of Drake May and Josh Allen. Mike Vrabel's kind of been pushing this thought all week, and Drake May talked about it. It's Bills Patriots. It's the Patriots coming off a good win, trying to figure out, are they rolling in the right direction? How do they measure up to the Bills?
Yeah, it's a great gauge for us. You know, see how much... just kind of see, like I said, see what we got. You know, see what we, you know, we're competing on the road in a tough environment. And, you know, one of the first times we'll do that as a team. And see, you know, battling through, you know, playing four quarters of football, that's going to matter. Playing on the road, four quarters matters. You can't just play a half and you can't just show up, you know, at the beginning and not at the end. But playing, you know, full four quarters and going to a hostile environment and bringing our own energy. You know, not going to be many Pats fans. But, you know, we do travel well, so hopefully there will be. And then from there, like I said, just... also, not taking it as a, you know, end-all, be-all for this week. You know, you got a lot of long season ahead, but this is a great, you know, great kind of checkpoint to see, you know, what we got and what we can handle.
I thought that was really good, mature answer from the leader of your football team.
It is.
Very different than maybe, say, I don't know, what Shedeur Sanders might have said in the same situation.
And I'm going to give a quick comparison to what he's talking about. So, not every game is created equal. I'm sorry, Fitzy. I'll get you next there, bud. Not every game is created equal, and there's games that are checkpoint games like this game is, much like the Rams game was for us in 2001.
Yep.
And we lost that game by a touchdown, but we felt if we ever – and they were the best team, right? They won the Super Bowl the year before. The Bills right now are favored to win the Super Bowl, and it's not even close. And so you go in there, you compete, you keep it close. You get to play them again December 14th. And then, and hopefully, you're a much more improved team at that point, that you've learned from maybe the mistakes you might make in this upcoming game. And so there are, this is a moral victory type of game. They can win this game if they play a clean game, but this is more than anything, it's a game in which you kind of do measure yourself up against the best team in the NFL.
Yeah, so Ted, I was just pretending to be sure Sanders there for a second as well. Oh, after Andy said the maturity. No worries. And I'm with you as well. And the 24-17 game back in November 2001 against the Rams is memorable in millions of ways for millions of people, especially you guys as well. And I like the fact that this is being called litmus test, barometer game, gauge, meter, whatever you want to call it. Prove that you belong on the same, like, you could say, well, they did that last November, not last December with the 24-21 game. I think a lot of us left that game, Andy. I think this was our take on the Six Rings postgame show, too, that Buffalo just came out flat. And the Patriots had a beyond best effort type of first half, ran out of gas, and the better overall team ended up winning. Now you have to go toe-to-toe four quarters. You be Rocky Balboa against the champ. Let the champ get the, you know, get the decision, but prove that you belong in the same ring. Prove that you belong that you on the same football field, and don't make mistakes. Just let Buffalo beat you. That's my one request Thursday heading into Sunday Night Football. Let Buffalo beat you. Don't beat yourself.
And that is, I think, very accurate, Fitzy. Last year, I don't think you were a pimple on the Bills' butt, and I think they were a little flat in that game. This year, you might be the second best team in the division. And I think they realize that. And I think their head coach, now you can say head coaches do that every Wednesday, right? They're going to tell you how good the other team's quarterback is and how he's surrounded by this and supported by that. But I think the Bills, I think Josh Allen has an actual belief that Drake May is a young up and coming quarterback. I think Sean McDermott as a defensive coach looks at some things and says, oh yeah, he does put some guys in a bind the way my guy. I like watching it when Josh Allen does it better than I like preparing for Drake May. I think they respect where Drake May is taking the Patriots. And I do think, now that could be a double-edged sword. You might get the best of the Bills, and they might try to prove a point to you and say, you might be the second-best team in the division, but you're still a long ways away from us, and you're still a long ways away from Josh Allen. 617-779-7937. Speaking of the comparisons, Joe in the car. Seems like he doesn't care for it. What's up, Joe?
Are you serious right now? What are you smoking? I want to know what are you smoking. You're over here comparing Josh Allen off with Drake May. Where were you? You're comparing to all his numbers to a game that they played the worst team in the league, the Carolina Flanters or Panthers or whatever you want to call those guys. That is a horrible, horrible team. Because if I'm not mistaken, the flip flop is on this station. You guys got to, instead of WEI, it's got to be called the flip floppers WEEE. Because 2 weeks ago, you guys were complaining about his interception he threw in the end zone. He can't get in the red zone there. Nope. You know, he doesn't make good decisions. And now you want to compare him to an MVP, Josh. I'm going to say something to you, Mr. Hart.
Yes.
I'm going to call you on Monday. What are you going to say when the Buffalo Bills give these guys a spanking if they lose by more than 20? What are you going to say then? But I'm going to tell you something right now. Four games in, you should already know what kind of team you have. So Drake May, this is a big test for him.
Good call, Joe.
Are you serious right now?
There's nothing better than somebody slurring their words asking you if you're serious on the radio, but I love it. I'm here for it. I am serious because you got the wrong guy, Joe. That's the one thing I'll say. Fitzy can back me up on this. That Steelers game, I was as optimistic as anybody because I said you marched the ball up and down the field, and I said both of those turnovers felt like he touched his hand to the stove. It was hot, and he'll not treat that play the same in the future.
Can I just tell Joe, has he seen what the Buffalo Bills have played this year? Buffalo Bills have played four games this year.
Yeah.
You know what the combined record is of those four teams?
2-whatever that should be on the other side of it.
It's 1-14.
I was close.
Oh, man. Oh, the lumber. Yeah, Ted, you also aware of this?
They played three teams, being the Jets, the Dolphins, and the Saints, that have yet to win a game. Yeah. And then the Ravens are 1-3. So add that up. Yeah. And so it's I hear what you're saying. I mean, the Patriots maybe haven't played teams that you've been impressed with, but neither have the Bills. So I think it's fair to compare – those stats against each other based on the fact that neither team has really played very good competition. Please, the Bills played 1-14 combined record of the four teams they've played so far.
I'm sorry. I wanted to add in, Andy, real quick. One other thing in their favor, guys. I've seen it on infographics shared on the socials and whatnot. Buffalo doesn't cross the Mississippi at all this year. Like, they don't have to go to the West Coast. They don't go to the Southwest. They have the most travel-friendly schedule. In addition to playing all these cupcakes and cheeseburgers, they have the most travel-friendly schedule. Everything has lined up. You'd think 345 Park Avenue guys literally said, this is the year we push Buffalo tush-push style across the goal line and get them their Super Bowl.
Don't mean to clarify your numbers, Ted, but I believe it's 2-14 right, according 2-14, to the research.
Sorry.
Same point, though. It's the same freaking point. Don't back down. It's the same point. And I also believe if Joe was listening, we talked a little bit ago about we're not actually comparing Drake May to MVP Josh Allen. We're comparing the skills and the trajectory, and if he continues to evolve as a quarterback, could he follow a similar path of ability and the plays he can make? Brian Hoyer said it the other day. The throw to Hunter Henry for the touchdown down the sideline was some Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen kind of stuff that you're getting from Drake May. Doesn't mean he's going to do it every play, because you know who didn't do it every play? Josh Allen early in his career. Josh Allen was hit or miss. Go back to his freaking college days. Remember, everybody was like, you watch Josh Allen's highlight tape and you think, oh my God, this guy's the next great, awesome thing. Then you watch his low light tape and you're like, he's going to get somebody fired if they draft him. He's terrible. He's never going to make it. And I think Drake May has never been as bad as Josh Allen has been at his worst. And maybe that's a grand statement for people like Joe. I think his floor has been higher than Josh Allen's floor at times, early in his both in college and then early in his career in the NFL. Now, the same can be true. His upside's probably not as high. Josh Allen, I said to you, Ted, I compare to John Elway. I think they're the most unique, physical, talented, total package guys. They come; those are literally, we say it too often, those are literally generational players. John Elway was the late 80s, early 90s. Okay, we're in the mid-2025s. Probably about time to have another generational talent built like that. And then in another 20 or 30 years, they might be another one that comes along. But that doesn't, if Drake May isn't Josh Allen, does that mean he's not really good? Like, does he have to be Josh Allen to be, how about he can just be Drake May? Maybe he's the third, fourth, fifth, sixth best quarterback in the NFL. Seems a hell of a lot better than what we've had recently, right?
You got that right.
That's all I'm looking for, Fitzy. Just be
that's
the,
all I want, baby.
Just to remind people, Josh Allen, his first year, in 12 games, he completed 52% of his passes. He had 12 interceptions to 10 touchdowns.
Yikes.
So,
say 52% of his passes?
Yes.
And what was then, that, 1947?
And what was in his second year? Drake May's in his second year. Still. What was Josh Allen's second year completion percentage?
58.8%. 59! You round up. I had math in elementary school.
20 touchdowns to 9 interceptions. So, I mean, come on. It's if you compare the first 2 years to Josh Allen, Drake is outperforming Josh. That doesn't mean he's going to end up as good as Josh, but he's on a trajectory that would suggest that he can be just as good, if not better, than Josh Allen.
617-779-7937. Let's go to the phones to up the comparison game. Marcus in Roxbury, what's your question?
Hey, I got a question for Ted. I was wondering, do you think that Drake May is closing in on Lamar Jackson, or is Lamar Jackson just having an off start of the year? I'll hang up and listen to you guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for the call, Marcus.
I mean, no, Lamar Jackson's in a different class.
He's got multiple MVPs.
There's freaks, and then there's super freaks, and then there's Lamar Jackson. I'm the biggest Lamar Jackson fan there is. So.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I knew that.
Nope. Love him. And, I love the fact that it wasn't him that got the Ravens bounced in the championship game last year. It was his tight end that
Mark
dropped
Andrews.
The ball that got him bounced.
He's done that multiple times. Go back and look.
I'm a fan of Lamar's.
2 years ago, Lamar Jackson hit, I believe, Mark Andrews in that game, crossing the middle, deflected right through his hands for an interception.
That's right.
We paint these quarterbacks as the winners and losers. A lot of times, if you dig a little deeper, there's a lot of evidence that others are involved. Yes, Fitzy.
Yeah, I would also like to add, Andy, in that very same AFC Championship where the heavily favored Ravens lost to the Chiefs, Todd Monken could not have called a worse game if he tried to. You did have the Andrews bobble into the arms of the Chiefs. And also, Zay Flowers, crossing the goal line, sticking the ball out, having it punched out at the half yard line. Right. Baltimore should have won that game and gone to the Super Bowl.
Let's squeeze one more call. Let's go to Mike in the car. What's up, Mike?
Yeah, hi. You know, you guys are so inconsistent. Last week, you were talking about, will Drake May even be here next year? How long should we let this experiment last?
What show were you listening to? Whoa, Mike. What show were you listening to? Wasn't this one. Wasn't me. Wasn't me, Mike. Wrong show, wrong host. Wrong show, wrong host.
Now he's Josh Allen, and he's going to win MVP. He's the greatest thing. Give me a break, because he put up 45 on the Carolina Panthers. What are you guys, jokes?
Well, we might be jokes, but not in this case. I don't know what he was listening to. There was nobody last week that was saying he wasn't the quarterback. Anybody. Maybe it was Stiz. Yes,
no,
Stiz.
But I was just going to say, the narrative has significantly changed since last Sunday.
Yeah, but not for me. I would urge you.
I asked you off air if he would be here in 5 years. You said no.
I don't think I said that, did
you
I?
You definitely did.
And things that are off air aren't to be brought on air.
That's the cardinal sin right there. You don't bring off-air conversations.
I asked you about your mother's apple pie off-air, and you said something that I won't bring on air because I'm a nice guy. But I don't know if I said that, but that is the way it works. We react. We sometimes overreact. But Fitzy, you can attest. Six Rings post-game show after the Steelers game, I was weirdly optimistic about Drake May after those turnovers, correct?
No, you were the last 3 weeks, the Dolphins game, they found their quarterback, Steelers game, Drake May is not to blame, and then last week put Drake May, you went so far as to say Drake May is going to wear a red jacket in the Patriots Hall of Fame, and he may be Canton worthy.
Yeah, Mike's got the wrong show.
I think he added something on the end that wasn't me. It wasn't the red jacket. I said that, but
it was Stiz who blamed him for the Dominion voting fraud a couple of years ago.
Well, yeah, Stiz hates him. I mean, he told me that off air, not on air. Coming up next here on WEEI Afternoons, we are joined by Lou Maloney, the best guest in Boston. I can't wait. We thought Tom Curran had energy talking about the Patriots and Drake May. Lou Maloney has been pacing his hotel room, pacing the streets, putting out videos, eating bacon. He is ready for Game 3 like nobody else, and he'll bring it here next on WEEI Afternoons.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's just a completely different. There's no more hope.
I think I know more now.
Lean back.
That was the voice of Lou Maloney in New York. He is prepping for Game 3, and we are prepping to talk to Lou Maloney.
Lineup is out.
Before we get to Lou, we got some news of the day. Dan Ball.
All right, lineup tonight for the Red Sox. Jaron Duran back in the leadoff spot. He is back in left field. Trevor Story at short. Alex Bregman at third. Masataka Yoshida, Andy's guy, is your DH. Seidon Rafaela in center field hitting fifth for the Red Sox tonight. Nate Lowe at first. Carlos Narvaez, your catcher. Willy Abreu in right. And Romy Gonzalez is your number nine hitter this evening. He is at second base.
Interesting. Let's go to the guest line now then and get instant reaction from Lou Maloney. You just heard the lineup is out. What is the most notable aspect of that lineup, Lou?
I think the only question was second base. You know, Romy Gonzalez, when you faced righties, has been hitting fifth for you behind Yoshida now for 2 or 3 weeks. It looked like a set lineup. He hasn't looked right here the last couple of days. I don't know if he's dealing with something or not, but for him to be in this lineup, but hitting ninth, kind of tells you they're trying to manage maybe late in the game. He might be a guy that they'd look to maybe bring somebody in to swing it for pinch hit.
All right, now that we got the lineup out of the way and your reaction, how you feeling? The blood pressure okay? Where's the pulse, the heart rate? What have you been doing all day to get ready? Because you still got, 3 hours, 3+ hours?
Yeah, you got to pace yourself is what you really got to do. And I've been doing it all day long. I'm on the train right now, about to arrive at Yankee Stadium. So it doesn't really hit you until you're kind of in the booth with like 10 minutes to go. You know what I mean? Before the first pitch. So you try to kind of calm the nerves and get ready to go here. But the beauty of it is, like, I still have those same feelings like I play. The difference is I don't have to go out and play. I can just sit there and watch it. So it's kind of nice.
So, Lou, of all the different things that went wrong last night or that the Red Sox didn't do that led to that unfortunate 4-3 defeat, which one bothered you the most?
Yeah. I would say the Bayo start. You know, because I felt like the reason why Whitlock was stretched for two innings is because he couldn't get through the third. And that just sort of started, you know, the bullpen deployment, right? If he had given you 3 1/3, if he had given you 4 innings, you're not going to have to get 2 innings from Garrett Whitlock. You get 1 inning, and it might affect tonight's ball game as well. So I just think the way it started, I think it was a good call. I don't think he had anything. I think it's a bad lineup matchup for him. Hasn't been in the past, but back then he used to be able to throw a changeup. And the fact that he hasn't been able to throw one now for a month in this ballpark, that's scary. So I think it was the right call, but it just really made the bullpen a guy short.
Hey, Lou, I was listening to you guys last night for the first few innings, and it seemed like you guys thought that maybe the Sox hitters were kind of laying off some really good pitches. They weren't as aggressive, that maybe they were thinking that you know, they just wanted to make tax Rondon to get to the bullpen. Do you think that should be a strategy? I mean, clearly getting to the Yankees bullpen is a strategy. They're trying to do that, but should they be a little bit more aggressive in some of these early in these counts than they were in last night's game?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a different ball game tonight with the guy in the mound. I just feel like Fried and Rondon, who both threw a lot of fastballs, really didn't throw many, you know, in against this Yankee Red Sox lineup rather. So like early on, I think that kind of, he didn't challenge them as much. Fastballs in, fastballs away. That's why he saw a lot of sliders and changeups taken for strikes. So I think he kind of kept them off balance a little bit. But tonight's a different story. I think all around, you know, you got two young kids in the mound. You don't know how long they're going to go. It's an elimination game. Somebody may go two innings and be throwing the ball well. This is one of those crazy games where everybody comes out of that bullpen. I would think everybody, except for probably Crochet and Bayo, but you never know with him either.
Lou Maloney, who will be in the booth again tonight with Will Fleming, Will Middlebrooks, and throughout the rest of the playoffs, assuming there is a rest of the playoffs after tonight in this game. Connelly Early, you know, these numbers are flying around. He's like the first guy to start a playoff elimination game within 30 days of his big league debut, and all youngest guy since Babe Ruth to start a playoff game. Is he ready for this situation?
Yeah, we're going to find out. It's hard to say yes or no because we haven't seen him enough. I think the one thing to keep in mind is, like, you know, he's had 4 starts, 2 on the road. His 2 starts on the road were in Tampa and Sacramento, two ballparks that are minor league parks.
Yeah.
You know, he's never pitched in front of more than 12,000 people. You know, on the road, that is. He's never pitched in, you know, a ballpark with a third deck, and the Yankee Stadium experience will be a little bit different. But I tell you what, like I actually, he puts me at ease. Like, he's a calm guy out there in the mound. He gets a ton of swing and miss. He's kept the ball in the ballpark. He's only given up 1 extra base hit in 4 starts. Like, I actually feel pretty confident with him out there. And they're going to probably ask him to maybe go 4 innings tops.
Yikes, I can't believe we're looking for a glorified opener tonight. It is a massive stage. And opposite him, Lou, we got to root against a local kid tonight. I mean, you know, he's from Walpole, went to college around here. What do you know about Schlittler, and what should Red Sox, it's difficult to say, what should Red Sox fans expect from Schlittler?
He's just 98-99 on top of the zone. He's a big guy. Throws the ball hard. You know, it's true, right? You don't want to hate against your local guys, but he's from Walpole. So I'm going old school for a Bay State League, Framingham Walpole rivalry. So for me, it's easier.
I hated Walpole growing up in Braintree, Lou. Come on. I hated him.
That's what I mean. So, but however, you know, Northeastern guy playing for my boy, Mike Glavin down in Northeastern. He loves him, but still, I think Glav's rooting for the bullpen to give it up. But it's an interesting game, right? Because you get these two rookies out there. One's from Walpole, went to Northeastern against you, pitching for the Yankees. So it's both young pitchers. I think it's going to be obviously a big bullpen game, and this game will be decided probably in the middle innings.
Well, I was going to ask you about the bullpen because it feels like the Yankees have used a lot of their high-leverage pitchers you know, in the last two games. Does that give the Red Sox an advantage in the bullpen because of that?
You know, it's funny because it's like 3 days. They're all going to go on 3 days. You know, Whitlock's on 47 pitchers. But I still kind of view this as like, you know, it's the first round. Like, you know, if we're talking about the ALCS, you know, in 2 weeks, if we're talking about the World Series, then you start talking about usage of bullpens. But I'm not really sure it comes into play today. You know, I expect Whitlock to be ready.
Holy crap.
Uh-oh.
Lou? Did you miss your train?
No. The train just went flying by me.
Oh. But you're okay.
Watch out on those platforms, Lou.
Behind the yellow line.
Holy smokes.
No. It was a four. Was it like a 4-5 or something?
Step away from the line.
Yeah. That's a... my answer in the train talk, that's a good way of saying I don't see it being a problem here tonight. The playoffs just started. These guys are still kind of fresh. Give them a couple weeks before they're really struggling.
So, Lou, my guy Ted Johnson has questioned Jaron Duran when he's in the leadoff spot. He's questioned sometimes if he puts too much pressure on himself. And obviously, Jaron Duran made a huge mistake last night, which you could argue cost them the game. Butterfly effect, who knows? Took accountability for it. Now he's in the leadoff spot, coming off last night. Do you expect him to bounce back? Do you think he's a guy that can use that as motivation, try to do too much? Could it hinder him? What do you get from him tonight?
Yeah, you know, with him, it's just a wild card. That's the thing. I think a lot of times, you know, it wasn't the best series for him, strictly because he's coming in facing Frieden and Rodon. He's going to be a lefty that plays every day. He's 2-for-26 off those two guys combined. He doesn't hit well in Yankee Stadium. So it wasn't really set up for him very well in the first two games. And when that happens, I think he realizes how important he is to the team. And if he's not swinging it, I think sometimes he takes it out on himself, obviously. And in the field, sometimes it can be a little shaky. So that play there, yeah, you like to see him make it. There's no question about it. The key for him tonight is going to be lay off the fastball up. You know, because that's a pitch that he likes to chase. He likes to swing at. And Schlittler's got a good one. It's going to be 98 up top there. So hopefully he can rebound. You know, one swing of the bat from Jaron Duran can change it. We've seen that, right? And like these games where guys have kind of struggled in a series, and all of a sudden in the clincher, somebody who has struggled comes up big, and we sort of forget about the first two. So hopefully that's him.
Lou, if you could pick anyone besides Duran to be the spark plug, to be the person that gets the offense going tonight, so we're not looking at a 1-0, 2-1 affair, who would it be?
Yeah. Well, it's got to be the two guys you kind of lean on here, and Story and Bregman. Story's come up huge every time all year long when the team needs something or is winning big games or getting big hits. He's been in the middle of all of it. And then you got to lean on the experience of Bregman. You know, I mean, he's been here before. So hopefully he just kind of comes in here, relaxed, loose, and that kind of guys play off of that. But, you know, in that first inning, if you see guys that have been here before, like Story, like Bregman, come out and maybe have a good at-bat, hit the ball hard, whatever, get on base, pop a double, I think that can kind of relax some of the guys.
Hey, Lou, I heard your little mini rant after the game, so I'm going to set the ball on the tee for you to knock it out.
Nice.
They have thousands of at-bats the Red Sox have this year, but only 13 bunt attempts. I heard you last night talking about the bunting and how come these guys can't execute the bunt better? In BP, do the guys not practice bunting as part of their BP practice? Why can't they bunt better?
Yeah, they do. I mean, they practice bunting, but it's just like anything else. You can take BP all you want, but until you get in a game and do it, it's completely different. To me, it's the problem with baseball, and it's not just the Red Sox, you know, although given the type of team they are right now, and they really did this in September, you know, moved the runner, put some bunts down in September. But the game itself, like for 6 months, is, you know, hit home runs, don't bunt. That's not a way to maximize runs. Well, should I move the runner over for third? Nope. Try to get a hit, try to hit a double, try to score 3 or 4 runs every inning. And then it seems like when the games matter the most, when we're in the playoffs, you see all these teams trying to bunt. And all of a sudden, contact matters. Like people are like, no, I can't strike out in the playoffs. Need more contact. Well, you know, you need more contact. You need to do little things. You got to play fundamental baseball. But in a regular season, none of that matters. Like, how does that make sense? Like, how do we not preach moving runners and making contact and bunting and winning ball games during a regular season? And then all of a sudden in October, we want our team to figure out how to play differently. Like, it just, and like I said, it's not the Red Sox. It's everybody. All of a sudden you get to the postseason and the things that should matter all of a sudden matter. But for 6 months, you tell me they don't. It's just a weird place.
All right, Lou, before I ask you to map out what is going to happen tonight, we got to bitch about one more thing. Can you explain to me, I keep going through it, I don't understand why Nate Eaton is not thinking, I'm crossing home plate no matter what. If the inning ends on a ground ball to first, whatever. If not, I score. Like, what the hell happened there?
Yeah, I think that's a little combination of both him and Kyle Hudson, third base coach. You know, I think up the middle he's waving him when he sees it caught. Immediately, it's like, wait, hold on here. You know, because he may fake the throw to first, you know what I mean? Like, and hold it and probably just come home with it. That type of thought. To me, I like to see him round the base a little more aggressively. I mean, even if Bryce picks that ball and he's safe, he's not going to throw across the diamond and throw him out. So if you're a third of the way down and it turns into the conversation turns into, hey, follow the ball, follow the ball, follow the ball, then you see it trickle away, you got a better shot of scoring. Now, I will say this. The angle in which that ball ricocheted off Rice, if you think about where the third basemans are, it kind of went to Rice's back right. And as a third baseman, third base coach, you don't – I'm not sure they knew he caught it or it trickled away.
Yeah.
Like, if that ball bounced towards the home plate, given where you're standing on third, you would have seen that. But it was kind of behind him and Yoshida, and it's tough to kind of see. It's unfortunate. If you were uber aggressive, which maybe you should have been because it was 3-2, two outs, and just send him the entire time, he would have scored easily.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. All right, so let's move on. It's game three. You'll be in the booth tonight, Yankee Stadium here on WEEI. What's going to happen? Yep. Map it out for us.
I think they'll win.
Yeah.
You know, I saw Bregman leaving the hotel, and I don't really see him smile too much. And he just had a huge smile on his face. He looked at me, and he's just like, this is going to be fun. And for some reason, I just calmed my whole body down.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know why. But I think, you know, I don't know how far they can go because their pitching's really thin. But I think that they can ruin this parade here in Yankee Stadium tonight. And I'm going to be here for it, and I can't wait for it.
Love it.
Lou's attitude immediately after the game turned to positivity. He had already forgotten about last night's game right after the game.
Yep. Well, because Lou also knows that in 13 straight wild card series, the team that won game one won the series.
Right.
Right now, and it's 1-1 in Detroit and Cleveland, so that is not false yet. No one has screwed that up, so Red Sox can ride that to victory. Hopefully, we're talking to you soon about Blue Jays, Red Sox. Enjoy the game.
Have fun, bud.
Hope so, too. All right, guys, have a great one. Enjoy it.
See you. Thank you, buddy.
That was Lou Merlone huffing and puffing his way from the train to Yankee Stadium. I didn't know if that was his energy or the walk or a combination.
I think he almost got clipped by a subway.
I think he did. Yeah. He got scared. Yeah. He got scared. He was shook for a second there. Whatever blew by him at a high rate of speed.
Got to pay attention when you're on the phone.
Well, and it's not just the train. Subways. It's the gust of wind that moves you, and you're like, holy crap, that's strong. Could have lost his phone. We could have been bouncing around down by the third rail. Thankfully, he made it, though, and finished the interview. And he'll be in the booth tonight with Will Fleming, Will Middlebrooks here on WEEI Game 3. Red Sox-Yankees will continue to break it down with some of those cuts from Lou Merlone up next here on WEEI Afternoon.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
think of the Browns, outside of
Browns. You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
What's going to happen? Yep. Map it out for us.
I think they'll win.
Yeah.
You know, I saw Bregman leaving the hotel, and I don't really see him smile too much. And he just had a huge smile on his face. He looked at me, and he's just like, this is going to be fun. And for some reason, I just calmed my whole body down.
Yeah.
I don't know why. But I think, you know, I don't know how far they can go because their pitching's really thin. But I think that they can ruin this parade here in Yankee Stadium tonight. And I'm going to be here for it, and I can't wait for it.
St. Bregman strikes again. He leads the clubhouse. He leads on the field, and now he's leading analyst Lou Merlone to feeling good about Red Sox-Yankees Game 3, Yankee Stadium tonight. Fitzy, a little note. I know you love these little nuggets off Twitter.
Love a nug.
So 23-year-old Connelly Early will be the youngest pitcher to start a postseason game for the Red Sox since 21-year-old Babe Ruth in 1916.
George Herman Ruth?
Yep. All Babe Ruth did in that game was pitch all 14 innings of a 2-1 Red Sox win over the Brooklyn Robins in Game 2 of the World Series. He threw 145 pitches.
Okay, so the bar has been set early.
I don't need 14. I don't need 9. I won't even get greedy and ask for 7. Connelly Early, give me 5 innings, and we will call you a hero in Red Sox Nation forever. You give me 5 solid innings. I don't need shutout innings either. I'm not going to get greedy there. Let's say 5 innings, 3 runs.
You're scoring 3 runs?
Yes, of course I'm scoring 3 runs. You see this lineup? Rafaela hitting 5th. He's not going to bunt anymore. He's going to hit bombs.
Wait, are you okay? Should I ask the producers to come in the studio for a wellness check?
Well, see,
Andy, they've scored 6 runs over 2 games. They're averaging 3 runs a game.
Lou Maloney's phone was so good. It was so much better than, say, Drake Mays, even though he was on a train and almost got hit by a train, and still it was clear the entire time. I think through these cellular waves, I picked up the confidence from St. Bregman via Lou Maloney. So I'm feeling better about this. Connelly Early, I think he has a little something. Am I wrong on this? Have we? What was that noise? Was that me annoying
that's
me? That's
the noise you made after Lou said, I think they win. You went,
yeah. Oh, boy, we're going to hear that, aren't we? That's very distracting in my own head. It's like Ted saying, you out of your mind?
Welcome
bro?
To our world.
Look, 5 innings, I'm gonna make my request of Connelly Early. I'm going to ask for 5 innings, 2 runs or less.
Okay, I mean, I will take as few runs as he can physically give up, but I think 3 would be good. If you don't score 3 runs, I don't think you deserve to win the game. You're the Boston Red Sox. This is a major league-ish lineup that you're fielding in game 3 here.
Ish, although this is my favorite of the 3 lineups. I mean, if they can, I think the key to all of it was, just like Lou said, lay off the high cheese from Schlittler. If all of them go out tonight thinking, tonight's the night I play hero, tonight's the night I kickstart this offense, tonight's the night that I hit one into the upper deck and right, then they're all going to be going for his high cheese. If they can lay off and show some plate discipline, then maybe, just maybe, they'll put some lumber on the ball, move some guys around, and put up some crooked numbers tonight.
And I also think, Ted Johnson, your guy is in the spotlight. The leadoff hitter at Yankee Stadium.
Yep.
You know what that means? First guy we're going to see tonight is who?
That's Jaren Duran. He's going to be the first guy walking up to the plate.
You ready? He ready?
You know, you just never know. He just, one swing of the bat, like Lou said, and all of a sudden it all just clicks in for him. He's got to lay off the high heat. That's his. Yep. That is where he gets in trouble, is when he starts chasing that high cheese outside of the zone, and that's where. You know, and so there was a time earlier in this year where he just was lost the plate. Then he found it, and now he looks a little lost again. So, and you know what? When he's hitting good, then the fielding is not an issue. So it all kind of works together for JD, but it's all going to start in that first at-bat.
Dan Ball?
Jaren Duran's strikeout in the first at-bat is +175 if you're feeling confident.
Man. No. You know what I want? I think the obvious answer is like, oh, I'd love to see him put one in the right field bleachers. I actually don't think that'd be the best case scenario in a weird way. That would score you a run, which is awesome for the Red Sox. You're up 1-0. Mm-hmm. I think a double or a triple for him where he's wheels, full bore rounding. I think that is like the energy that can inject life into him and then inject life into what Lou said. Now you lean on Story and Bregman and kind of get the lineup rolling. I actually think a double or a triple from Jaren Duran would be the best way to start this game.
Yeah. I'm wondering, is there a bet on like whether he swings at the first pitch? I feel like there was a period where he was swinging at the first pitch every time. And if this kid for the Yanks is dialed in at all, you know, it's usually first strike, you know, pitch strike. And so maybe, you know, I could see him swinging at that first pitch.
I could see him swinging at that first pitch as well. If I were Schlittler and I don't know his repertoire all that well, I would throw like a changeup because I think he's going to be so juiced up sitting 98 fastball that
thinking
he wants to crush.
Time.
Yep. And then all of a sudden he'll be so he'll do the Casey has struck out. He'll just pinwheel himself into the ground. 617-779-7937. 1 hour to go here on WEEI Afternoons, leading into Christian Arcan, leading into the Mass Mutual pregame show, leading into the biggest baseball game of the season here in Boston. Red Sox Yankees game 3. Winner advances Toronto. Loser faces talk radio on Friday. 617-779-7937. Up next, it is time for The Drive here on WEEI Afternoons.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.